Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, you're stuck with me. And we're talking about cars, and if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And this is what we ask you to do. If you give us year, make, and model of the car and the mileage, and then we're going to discuss symptoms. So it's better to discuss symptoms where we get to ask you questions and you answer them, and there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know. You see, the guys on YouTube can't diagnose your car because most of the time you can't tell us engine vacuum or O2 sensor activity, if it's running rich or if it's running lean or all that kind of stuff, vacuum leaks and broken lines, broken vacuum lines. So that's why it's important, because if you say I have this code and then I ask you if it idles rough and you say yes, then we're going to go in that direction. With me today is Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street in Glendale.
Greenway.
Well, what the heck? I'm looking.
Don't send them down the wrong road already.
You know, I was looking at my list here, there's no excuse. I just
grew. Well, I could. You know, I saw that coming right out of you, because the funniest thing is when a friend of ours was talking to me one day. He said, "You know, you're just like Mark." And then I came to talk to him, and he goes, "You know, brothers of different mothers sharing the same brain." So
exactly.
I can actually look across the desk and see what he's about ready to say sometimes.
It's been 20 years, and I don't know about you, but a lot of people have questioned my sanity. A lot of people have questioned my car repairability. A lot of people have, a lot of things, and a lot of shop owners. You know, sometimes they're really good friends, which is, you know, uh-huh, most of the time, and then sometimes they can be close to you and they're bad-mouthing the heck out of you and all that other kind of stuff. So our industry, I suspect, is no different than doctors and veterinarians and all that kind of stuff. There's a professional courtesy, but then there isn't.
Well, yeah, and it's amazing whenever you're in our industry when you're going to go call and talk to somebody else in the same industry. If you don't know that person, you get no professional courtesy most of the time, which is amazing to me.
There's a lot of times when you're talking to the owner, they don't have repair skills. They're a good business person, a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. They know right from wrong most of the time. But it's easy to determine, did you fix the symptom? What was it? A vibration? And you go drive it yourself. Was you shaking the seat of your pants or the steering wheel? The steering wheel. Fine, I'll go drive it. It doesn't take a genius to pull that off. But there's a lot of shop owners that don't have technical skills.
No, agreed.
But there are business people, and it's no different than there's probably guys out there that paint houses that have never lifted a brush, but they're good with organization.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we live in a difficult environment. Since newer model cars have come out, many of their stopping points in the maintenance schedule are 70, 80, 90,000. We've lost all the 30, 60, 90 stuff, and that's difficult.
Well, we've lost all. Let me back up. Years ago, 30 years ago in the summertime, you would always have water pumps leaking that blew up radiators or vice versa and blew a set of head gaskets and those kinds of things. Those are repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of repairs. Today, you don't see that because these cars last longer and they're easier to fix.
Well, they also
to a degree, but I'm just saying before you needed a mechanic, now you need a technician to figure him out. I think that's fair to say. So when you have better cooling systems, the services obviously are going to be extended further out because you're not, the oil's not getting as hot, the coolant's not being degraded, and so on and so forth.
But by the same token, the new car's shut down. They're not going to let you drive them with the light on for 100 miles while you go home.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to shut you down. If you lose oil pressure, many of them run the fuel pump circuit through the oil pressure switch, and they're going to kill your engine.
When they're done, they're done.
Yeah. So they're not going to let you cook the motor, the newer model cars. You have to, I don't know. If we shut the car off on you, it's just tough crap. You know what I mean? It's just, that's the way it is. And there's a lot of people that bring the car in where it kind of smells bad, and surprisingly enough, it's going to survive. But in the old days, from 76 all the way up to late 19s, those cars, you could drive those things until the motor just looked like a big piece of metal molded in aluminum.
And when they stunk bad, remember that smell? Pull the radiator cap off it. It's got this smell. I only drove it about a mile and a half.
Yeah. You can't.
Was that a mile and a half from Tucson to Phoenix?
It is. Those are the kinds of things that it's kind of tough to do. Now, it's really tough. It's the husband and wife are standing there. Now, one of them drove it too far, but you can't. You know, start pointing fingers. You just say, I want to tell you it smells kind of bad. I'm going to have to do a little bit of work here to figure out what's the matter with it, but I'll call you with an estimate. And
well, he says, honey, did you really drive that car that far? Is that true? And she looks at him and says, listen, let me tell you, don't put too much bleach in the laundry. You get in my drift?
Yeah, no. Yeah, those kinds of conversations, they go on in our world with our wives. It's no different. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Get a lot of calls on the show about codes, and we get a lot of calls on the show about so-and-so said I should fix it this way. That's something I struggle with because cars are so sophisticated today that I can't diagnose your car over the phone, and there's not a guy in Cleveland that's going to diagnose your car over the phone. I don't know if you have, but I've gone on to the internet, and I'll do specific symptoms, obvious symptoms. And you'll find 30 different people that have an idea.
That have 30 different ideas.
And then you go to those websites where you pay for a doctor or a technician or a painter. You pay for that.
And ask Elmer. Yeah. He'll give you the answer.
That's right. And then they'll pull it up. Not too long ago, my boom lift has joysticks. And I put a new joystick on, and there's three pots on the circuit board. So I went on the internet and this heavy equipment thing, and so I said, hey, I've got this snorkel lift, and it's a 40-footer, and here's the model number, and it's got two joysticks, and what I need to know is there's three pots on this new joystick, and it needs to be adjusted. He says, well, just a minute. So he comes back and he goes, you just have to adjust them until you get what you want. I said, I know, but I think there's some kind of a value there. It's an 8-volt system, so what do we do? And he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. So I finally called the Snorkel Tech Line, and the guy goes, this one is for start and stop. This one is for fast and slow. This one is touching this.
The rabbit and the turtle.
Well, he says, you're up in the air, and you want to move closer to a window. Well, when you got the boom extended, we know that. So when you turn it to move it clockwise, the last thing you want to do is blow the window out. So he says, we're going to give you a little bit of to make it move slowly when it's extended, but not on the ground. And I said, that makes so much sense. That was a problem. You got up close to a window, you couldn't get close to the window because the thing moves so fast.
You're going to go through the window.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I admit, and so you have to too. We're not that good on the telephone. We're not that good on the telephone.
To try to figure out what's behind that code, and when you when somebody comes in and they have an O2 sensor code, how many things are behind that O2 sensor code? You've got fuel, you've got spark, you have hydrocarbons or CO or an exhaust leak or. And the list goes on.
Vacuum leak, a bad brake booster, and we have too much NOx, and that tells us which direction EGR. There is. EGR, operational. Temperature of the engine. So we have to bring it up to operating
too
temperature.
Too hot, no EGR, NOx are off the charts.
Right. So you have all of these moving parts on an oxygen sensor code. So it's as easy as this, if you have the right tools. The oxygen sensor code is 1 volt divided by 10. Right? Just round figures.
Yeah.
Okay, we want the O2 sensor to be 5. We want it to vacillate
right
between 6 and 4. 6 and 4. 6 and 4.
And it moves back and forth?
At the speed of light. It's fast.
You can't see it.
So to test the O2 sensor, you want it to go lean. Now, lean is low. I tell people that. Lean is low on the low number. So how do you get it to 1?
You just get a vacuum line, take it off.
That's it. Exactly. But if you can't watch the operation of it, and those little code readers that those three-whiskered kids have at the auto parts store, they're not watching the parameters we are. We're actually talking to the computer. So we make it go lean to 1 volt. and then we look, and did the O2 sensor see it? Well, it didn't. So then we go rich. So we make it rich, and we better see 9. Uh-huh. We don't see that either. What's dead?
Uh-huh.
So you move it around, and they go, well, I checked it. What did you check it with? A digital voltometer? Yeah. That's not real scientific. That's like picking your nose with an ice pick. It's just not going to work real well. How'd you like that analogy?
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. You know, is it the ice pick or the Q-tip or the Q-tip with no cotton on the end of it? Wait a minute, I hurt my eye. But no, you don't need one 6 inches long.
Did you hear that air gun? Dale, give him the air gun again. That means someone's calling. Dale, who have we got?
Say good morning to Buffalo.
Buffalo, good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. The reason I called this morning was I'm a benefactor of, a customer of Blackwell Automotive.
I'm sorry.
I have a Grand Caravan, and I was having all kinds of problems with the brakes, and I had Tom drive it, and it seemed to be fine, and it just didn't seem right to me, so I took it back again, and he's got a guy in his shop that I want to give kudos to, is Smitty. Mm-hmm. Smitty sat down in the driver's seat, backed up about 4 feet, and said, told me exactly what the problem was, and got it in and got it fixed. They got it all taken care of for me, and it's back in first-class shape the way it should be. The way all my vehicles come back from Blackwell Automotive. So,
how much did it cost you?
To Tom and to Smitty.
All right. How much did it cost you?
Well, I haven't finished paying for it yet.
Okay. Well, do you have any idea what the total amount to fix your brakes were?
It wasn't down at the brakes. It was in the pump, the
power steering
assist
pump,
the. EGR, I mean, not the EGR, but the ABS system something was going out, and it was around $1,200.
Oh, my God. That at any other shop in town, that would have been
$49.95, Buffalo.
Yeah, but you know, I wouldn't have got the points on my Blackwell card.
Oh, yeah, now I understand that. I understand that completely.
And those are valuable now.
Yeah, I understand that completely. Well,
you take good care of Tom while he's down there, and don't let him give you any trouble, and tell him that I'll bug him sometime next week.
That's fine. The issue is you and I are not the kings of cars. Each one of us hires around our weaknesses. I got Eddie, okay? I got Adam. Adam's a diesel guy. Eddie is an all-around Ford guy. He knows part numbers by on top of his head. I got Scott, who will do that 47-hour condenser on the new Chrysler. He'll have the entire car sitting in the backseat, front seat, dashboard, center console. The carpet's out of it. That's Scott. And he puts all the bolts in right. So we have those guys that support us. So it's not embarrassing for you or me to turn around and say, let me get Smitty. I want a second pair of eyes. Mm-hmm. That's what makes us good. 18 minutes after the hour, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And everybody, of course, you know that my $40 estimate on top of his $1,200 was just a jab, and it's because I control the microphones. I get to do that. We'll be right back. After the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here. Tom Blackwell from 40th Street and Greenway. I've known him for about 20 years. He's a pretty doggone good technician, but like I said, all of us have technicians that fill in our weakness. And let's go to the phone. We've got a lot of callers. Steve, you're up. What can we do for you?
I have a quick question. With all the new technology, what's up with brake fluid replacement? Is that something that is a necessity anymore?
Well, here's what I think, and Tom will follow up. We used to have the worst part of the brake, if you let the brake fluid get real heavy moisture or a lot of trash in it, the worst thing you had was a couple wheel cylinders. Today we have ABS. The ABS pump could be $1,000. So it's a good idea at some time to flush the brake system, and as far as I'm concerned, it's easiest to do it when you're already doing the brakes.
Exactly, and when you're doing that, you can test the brake fluid
for moisture.
With a strip. You can test it for moisture. Mm-hmm. Then you know that it needs to be done. But yes, when you've got the brakes open, flush them, keep that new fluid in there.
Well, there's a savings there because there's a duplication of labor. I'm already going to flush it or bleed it if I'm going to replace calipers.
Correct.
Then if I'm going to do a brake fluid flush, then there's a discount there associated with the fact I was going to bleed it anyway. So the issue is we're seeing a lot of that. Transmission, coolant, power steering, brake fluid, differential fluid. We're seeing a lot of it. While the differential fluid and some of the transmission fluid is now synthetic,
correct,
then it's better and it lasts longer. But there's still problems with all that.
Whenever
quick
service...
Question.
Go ahead.
Is there a specific interval, say you're not getting a brake job done, like 20, 30, 40,000 miles? And how much should a brake system flush cost? I got a 2017 Nissan Versa.
Okay. Tom, cost and miles?
Miles could be 40, 50,000.
Okay.
And again, when we're in an area, in an environment like we have in Phoenix, I think that's fair.
Okay.
The other thing is between, say, $85 and $110, depending on where you're at. I think that's about an average, in my opinion.
Without ABS. When you start bleeding the ABS system, it's altogether different.
A completely different story.
Okay. So a conventional system without ABS or traction control could run $200 to $300. I'm going to stretch out your time frame because your 40-50 is in the middle of my time frame. But I'm seeing a lot of them with moisture at 75 and 80. And so that's actually 2 or 3 years old, and his is a 17. So he's already 2 years old. So if I were you, Steve, I'd probably let it get another year. How many miles are on it right now?
30,000.
Okay. He hasn't even done his first brake job yet.
No,
I think you're okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for the information, guys.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Joe, you're up next. Joe, how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you.
Okay. I have an 18 Chevrolet 4500 box van. And I have an intermittent misfire on number 8 and number 6. Been to the dealership 3 times. And they don't seem to be really doing anything to chase it down. I mean, they say it's electrical short. They claim that. But my son works for Buick, and he looked the vehicle up. And in a 6.0 truck motor like I have, they actually have a TSB on carbon buildup on the valves, which would cause the misfire.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's been in dealership 3 times, I'm not too worried about the warranty. If it continues to do it, they'll continue to look at it. But it's just a real pain in the butt for me.
Okay.
What can I add in the fuel to possibly clean that up a little bit to stop this problem? Is there anything I can add in the fuel to do that?
Okay, first of all, technical service bulletin always has symptoms. So you better have the symptoms. So, number two, I don't know about you, Tom, but when we start having misfires, usually I'm swapping injectors or I'm swapping spark plugs. So we take number three and put it number eight, number eight, and number three, and if the problem moves, voila. As far as carbon is concerned, you got a couple of choices. You can spend the rest of your money and all your wife's money putting magic potion and lotions in the fuel tank, or you can drive it like you stole it.
Well, you know, I got a really heavy load. I haul around about 10,000 pounds worth of tooling all day long. So it is on the heavy load most of the time.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. I need high RPMs. I need you to stuff it in second gear. I need you to roughhouse it.
Well, I would do that in my Corvette, but I can't do that here in my work truck.
All right. Okay, well, how about, does it ever idle rough?
No.
Well, then
it does not.
Misfire.
But it seems like that.
Go, Tom.
It seems like that check engine light every time this happens.
Okay.
I'm idling. Sit still.
All right. It has nothing to do with idling and the check engine light. It's after 10 misfires, the check engine light comes on. Go.
Do you have an issue starting it up when it's cold, and how does it run
at
that point?
No.
Runs perfect when it's cold.
Yeah.
I have to say that there's not a lot of carbon in the intake valve, because when there's carbon on the intake valve and you get fuel in it, to start it up when it's cold, the carbon absorbs that fuel, creates a little bit of an issue in the hard...
An extended cranking time.
Well, that would... We're talking now fuel, pressure,
right?
You know, bleed, and pump, etc., regulator.
And you're right. It's a situation where it could be a lot of things, but what bothers me about this, Tom, is he doesn't have a misfire. He doesn't have a rough idle. It's not popping. And if the exhaust valves were, had heavy carbon and they were being held open, it would backfire through the exhaust.
Is there any engine noise at all?
No, I have no engine. I have to correct you, Mark. It does when the check engine light comes on. The dash is like a Christmas tree. I have the traction control coming on, the squiggly line, skid mark thing, engine light, and it does run rough. That only when the light comes on. And Okay. Now when the light goes off, it's perfect.
Okay.
2 minutes.
It does have a misfire of some kind.
What we have found, Joe, on some of those is bad alternator, diode problem, especially with all the lights coming on, can create an issue. That's what I'm... With what you just said, that's my response.
Well, not only that, it's matches. When else does the Christmas tree light up on your dash until we have an electrical malfunction? Until we have an electrical... And if all of a sudden we jump to 18 volts, there's a lot of things that are going to go crazy. They ain't never seen 18 volts. So I'm not going to criticize the dealership. I'm not going to criticize somebody wanting to fix based on a TSB. The problem is if the TSB has the symptoms, then fine. And the TSB, the technical service bulletin, will say, here's the car, here's the motor, here's the year spread. This is the symptom. The lights, the dash lights up like a Christmas tree. And during that period of time...
I have three lights on the dash when this happens. It's just all of a sudden, boom.
Okay.
But I'm idling.
Okay, well, we're not going to be able to fix your car for you. We've given you as much information as we can. And here, you said something about warranty. Let me comment about warranty. If you have some paperwork that this problem existed before the end of warranty, there's no such thing as the end of the warranty on that same problem. You had it before. They couldn't get... And when you go in, you make them write down all your symptoms, everything you've got, and then keep your receipts. Because if you're 10,000 miles out of warranty and all of a sudden it needs a computer and that fixes your codes and all that kind of stuff, you just go back and say, here. And they'll do that. So there's no such thing at the end of the warranty on an oil leak or anything else. 602-508-0960. Fred, you stay there. You're going to be first call. 602-508-0960. Mark Salem, Tom Blackwell. We know just about nothing. And so we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, and we're going to go to Fred, just like I promised him. Fred, thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a 2017 Honda Ridgeline. It's just out of warranty by time. Only has about 20,000 miles on it. What do you think of extended warranties?
I think there's going to be a disagreement in the studio about this. But I tell my customers, give me the copy of the contract, I'll take those monthly payments, and I'll do everything that contract says. And I'm going to make money and you're not. So I'll give you a good example. A lady comes in and she has a radiator bad, she has an aftermarket warranty. The tank is leaking coolant. So we submit it to the aftermarket warranty company and they come back and say, we're not going to cover it. And the question is why? And they said, well, she didn't have a transmission service when she was supposed to. Well, what's that got to do with the radiator? Well, the transmission cooler lines go through the radiator. I know, but that system's fine. We're leaking coolant. We're not leaking transmission fluid into the cooling system. Well, I'm sorry. That's the way it's going to be. So there's nobody to appeal. You got some guy that probably doesn't even change his own oil, and he's looking at the rule book. And he's how many times has that happened to you?
I had one in a couple of weeks ago where the air conditioning hose, for instance, had a leak in it.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened to be that the compressor was locked up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Their comment was, the hose is not covered. Therefore, the compressor is not covered because it lost refrigerant and oil and caused some compressor damage, even though the low-side switch didn't pick it up. Doesn't matter because the low-side switch isn't covered either.
In people's talk, the leak at the hose caused the compressor to fail. That's what they're saying. They don't know that, neither do we. But it's just a way to get out. Every day when we have to, and then they don't pay shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax. They don't pay for Freon. They don't pay for a lot of stuff that somebody else has to pay for. So Fred, I don't know that I would do that, Tom.
Each repair in some cases, each symptom AC, oil leak, whatever it is. You got three items to check. You have, let's say, three covered repairs. In this case, we're going to say covered.
Mm-hmm.
$100, $50, whatever it is, deductible per repair, plus shop charge, plus sales tax, plus and whatever the diagnosis fee may be or may not be.
Yeah.
One other thing that I'll just follow up with real quick. Some contracts say only replaced if it's a covered repair. Crankshaft goes bad, then the rear main seal's covered. It's a $1,200 repair if the seal's bad. But the seal's bad, the crank's not, so you're out the $1,200 because they don't cover it.
There's all kinds of stories. We both could go on for the rest of the hour talking about these kinds of stories. I'm going to give one more, and that's it. We got a BMW on the rack. They say, and the rack and pinion's leaking. They say, take it out. So we take it out. Now, the car's on the rack for the rest of its life. I can't take it off the rack. I took the steering out of it. And he goes, okay, we're going to send an investigator by. And he goes, yeah, it's leaking. I said, I know that. Well, we're going to send you one. No, you're not. Yes, we are. We're going to send you one. It's going to be from China, and it's going to take 3 days. Wait a minute. That's tying up one of my hoists. Well, sorry. No, I want to put mine in. I want you to pay for mine. No, we're not going to. We want to send the rack to you. We're done. I said to the customer, I'm going to put your rack back in it, and you're going to go away because I'm not playing the game that they do. Can you tell my panties are worn up or wadded up? Okay, Fred, thank you very much. But the answer from us, too, is there's way too much hassle, and if it was that lucrative of a deal for the customer, they wouldn't be in business. And the fact of the matter is that they're in business as a result of that. That's the way it is. All right, I want to talk real quick about Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been rebuilding and repairing transmissions since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. And actually, Phil knew Fred Flintstone. Remember when Fred had the car with, stone tires? So transmission repairs and replacements done by Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's able to put the transmission on a dynamometer without putting it in your car and testing the operation and checking it for leaks. If he made a mistake, you're not going to lose a day worth of work as he takes it back out and fixes it. So by taking this extra step, it's worth it. Not to mention the fact that to buy a state-of-the-art dynamometer for transmission ain't cheap.
1 minute.
So he does that to make sure the process is clean. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Tony, what do you got?
Hey, thank you, Mark. I really wanted to say I really appreciate what you do with the show, and you've given me a lot of advice. It's really helped me a lot. And, I really want to emphasize, what you do is you really want to keep the automotive industry as far as the repairs and everything like that really clean. You don't really want to have any bad shops out there. You're not a guy who tries to steal work from anybody else. You're a guy who promotes all the other good businesses out there. And one of the businesses that you advised me to go to was Blackwell Automotive.
Oh,
and
my God.
They did me a really good service.
I might have been drunk that day.
Well, I'll let you guys talk that out after the show.
All right.
Okay? But, I towed in my Ford Explorer, and I had a blown-out radiator. It was about a month and a half ago. And they had that thing knocked out, about a half day, just maybe a little bit more.
Well, good.
And I wasn't expecting that. I thought they were going to keep it overnight, because I've had to go to other shops that, didn't have to go to them. I went to them, and they just, draw it off, 2 days, kind of thing. But I really want to say thank you, to Blackwell Automotive and everybody there,
thank
what
you.
They did. And I got some front-end stuff that I'm probably going to have, looked at. It's a 97 Ford Explorer.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's starting to wear out. It's a four-wheel drive, So,
I understand.
The front end's getting a little worn out. And I'll be taking it in there soon and let them look at it.
Okay.
And, I trust them, and I'm sure they're going to do a very good job. And that's why I called them and say, you guys are doing an excellent job.
All right. Well, thank you very much, but I have two comments. Number one, when you only have one car a day, you can kick them out that fast.
I feel
you can answer after the break.
You right now?
I feel so honored that he would even speak that we had even one car a day.
And
even one car.
And then the second thing is I know Tony's related to you. So that's all there is to it. One car a day, Tony's related to you, he's your brother, your wife's sister.
We
got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. 44 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive sitting next to me, 40th Street and Greenway. And I'm Mark Salem every Saturday here from 10 to noon. We're talking about cars and car repair. If you'd like to join us or have a comment or if you want to chew my butt or anything else you want to do, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All right, the advertisement about texting and driving.
Do not text and drive.
Yeah, I know, but there's something at the very end of it. It makes people bad or something like that.
They're not good people.
Okay, well, I don't think that's it. I think the real meaning behind that is when you text and drive and get in a wreck and your face goes through the windshield, it makes people bad looking.
I think you have a little scratch on your nose.
Yeah, let me tell you something about texting and driving, okay? Now, go with me on the math here. You travel about 1.5 times your speed in feet.
Yes.
Okay. So at 50, you're doing 75 feet a second. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you look down, 1,001, 1,002, and you look up. At 50 miles an hour, you've traveled
150
feet. Well, 150 feet is half of a football field at 50 miles an hour. Because it's 300 feet for a football field. So that's half.
Mm-hmm.
People have to understand that. People have to understand that looking down at your phone for 2 seconds, and then if you go 75 miles an hour, all of a sudden we're traveling almost a football field a second. So you look down, you see the person, you push the send, you look up and you put it to your ear. You've already gone a football field. So anything that happens in front of you. The other day I was coming up the mountain coming to Payson. And this car kept crossing the line. And they were in the fast lane, which drives me crazy anyway, but that's okay. And they keep coming over the center line, going back and coming over. Well, the guy in front of me, as he goes to pass this guy, they come over, and they're 2 feet into his lane. So he goes into the emergency lane on the right. I'm behind him. He throws stuff all over my truck. Now, I'm not mad at him. I'm kind of mad at that car there for pushing him into the emergency lane where all the trash is at. That could have been a three-car wreck. Then when you pull up next to him, he's on the phone. So,
texting, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
Not paying attention.
No. He was texting, or he was talking, or he was texting. Because he had his phone in front of his face. So I don't know if he was dialing or whatever. All righty, tell me who we got.
Okay, we got Charles. He's next.
Okay, Charles. Hang on just a minute, Charles. I got to take care of some business. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Ellen handles the front. Bob handles the back. He's probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life, and I'll tell you why. He fixes cars that I passed on. He's that good. So if your car, every time you turn on the radio station at 9:60 a.m., the back windows roll down, he's going to be able to fix that. If you've taken your car to three places and nobody knows what's the matter with it, and it's not an intermittent problem, Bob can fix that. So all you have to do is remember 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he does oil changes and brake jobs and cooling system flush and windshield wipers. He does all that. But he's one of those guys that has the tenacity that very few other people have. Charles, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a 2000 motorhome 30-foot. A Chevy Workhorse frame.
Yeah.
And it doesn't handle very good at all, really. I've done quite a bit of stuff. I put all new shocks. I put a steering shock damper on it. That seemed to help somewhat. And I was wondering, I'm going to put in heavier coil springs on the front, and I think that might help quite a bit. But also my main question was about wheel extenders, hub extenders.
Okay.
Because it's really too narrow for the body of the RV.
Okay,
right?
But wait a minute. You told us all this stuff, but we don't know what you're fighting. Give us exact. I want a description exactly of what's going on.
Well, it's just all over the road. It's not stable. It rocks a lot when somebody goes by me.
Okay.
And it just seems like I have to have my hand on the wheel all the time and be paying attention, or it'll start. It's just one of them cars you got to vehicles you got to just hang on all the time and pay attention.
Well, what you're talking about is you're having to steer it all the time. You're having to correct right and then left. Okay, that has nothing to do with springs, and wheel extenders aren't going to fix that at all. That's a Chevy P30, right? I'm asking Tom.
Yes.
Yeah. Everything on the front end falls apart on those. Tie rod ends, idler arms, pitman arms. We replace that stuff all the time.
How many miles is on it?
It's about 39,000.
Okay.
There is a sway bar that's typically in the back. Most all the motorhomes have it. The sway bar is too narrow. Therefore, the torque that's happening in the rear of it, the sway bar is not able to compensate for that torque. The body roll back and forth.
Okay.
We had a client come in from Camping World with a sway bar that's wider that will help correct that problem. And our return phone call from that client said it was a big help for him.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. The sway bar has four mounts.
Yes.
If you make it wider in there, you have to. I'm talking to Tom. Hang on. You have to make a wider mount. Where are you going to mount that wider?
All of the mounts that are necessary to put that sway bar on are supplied in the kit.
Okay. Because the sway bar kind of looks like a lazy W, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a lazy U, okay? So it's wide, but it's got two ears on it. So we have to attach it four different places, and so we've got to have hardware that installs this wider one. So if he put chocks on it, springs aren't going to take care of this. I mean, if anything, the springs are going to make it roll even worse if they were bad. But even if the springs were worn out at 39,000 miles, him having to drive it constantly could be it. So you got two options here. You can do the wide, you can see Blackwell and do the wide sway bar on the back. And that would be something that would be a guess. That would simply be a guess. It's a good guess because it's already fixed the car. But if not, you could send him to who the person was. For me, I want you to do this. Does your wife love you?
Well, most of the time.
Okay.
Except when I'm driving my motorhome.
All right. Well, Tom and I both have. How many miles you got on your motorhome? How many miles you got in the seat of your pants? No. Tom.
About 70,000 miles in the seat.
And I have almost 800,000 in the seat of a motorhome. I've been to all 50 states. My family's been to every capital. Every summer we'd take off for a long time. So I got a lot of seat time. The issue is here's why I'm asking you to do, Charles. Lay underneath the front of the motorhome. Put your wife in the driver's seat. Set the parking brake. Make sure she doesn't shift into drive and drive over your pumpkin. And have her take her hand at 12 o'clock and go slowly to about 1:30 and then go to center and stop and then slowly turn left to about 1:30. You watch everything that moves, and everything has to move in complete synchronization. So if you look at the outer tie rod end, there can't be a delay where the top of the tie rod moves before the bottom of the tie rod. So that's called shaking down the front end. It's entirely possible that you've got a problem up there in the steering. It could even be in the steering box because you're having to drive it all the time. But it's not unusual to have a big truck go past you and make you sway. How much did your motorhome weigh, Tom? Tom?
35,000 pounds.
And my biggest one was at 40. So, and no matter what, when them diesels went by us at 10, 15 miles an hour faster than us, it was still wonkity, wonkity, wonky as you gather the front end up on that thing after those big trucks go by. Anyway, Charles, we've given you all we can give you, and I think that's certainly a fixable problem. But thank you very much for calling in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I want to talk real quick about Strictly Diesel. Nate at Strictly Diesel, when you meet him, he's just a giant of a man. I tell people this all the time, he's got hands like tennis rackets. But when he shakes your hand, he doesn't break your hand. He's a real genuine guy. So Strictly Diesel is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They sell parts 24 hours a day at their website. And they do good work, but it's important for you to understand that they're diehard diesel service repair diagnosis, but they work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're not taking the big diesels in, but you're talking about the Dodge, the Cummins, and the Ford. So the Ford, if you guys have a Ford, you already know that you need to have a shop follow you around. But we got the Ford 7.3. That's a great one. 6.0, 6.4, and 6.7 on the Ford side. Then on the Dodge side, you got the 5.9 diesel plus the 6.7. And then on the Duramax side, you got the 6.6 Duramax. That's all you got. So all of those vehicles, if you got a problem with the diesel, then that's a good place to start. 602-508-0960. Gil, tell us who's next.
David is next.
David, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, I've got a Ford van, the 98 Ford minivan. It's only got 126,000 miles on it. And I was driving my son back from University of Arizona down in Tucson one night, and the van just out of the blue shifted into a lower gear inadvertently, and it's been doing it ever since. I tried to find out if it was linkage or something.
No.
And I went through there, and I drove the car about 10 miles. When I got home into my driveway, there was a fire under the hood on top of the tranny there. Okay. So I think it was the transmission.
I got to go up against a break here. Real quick, you say it's a minivan, so is it like a Windstar?
Yeah, I think it's a Windstar.
Okay. Fair enough. And so the fire, real quick, the fire, did it consume a bunch of stuff, or were you able to put it out with minimal damage?
Put it out with minimal damage.
Okay, good. You stay right there. Stay right there, and we're going to put you on hold. And when we come back, Tom and I are going to brainstorm this over the top of the hour, and then we're going to come back and talk to you about that. So at 602-508-0960, we have four lines available. And I know that we're 2 minutes out, but the problem is there's a lot to talk about, and I think that David's going to benefit from you and I talking at the break. Wake up, Tom.
David, are we talking about the guy who's been listening to our story?
No, we're talking about David, who has the Windstar that's dropping a gear, which means his tachometer goes crazy, and it's like somebody shifting from fourth to second at 70 miles an hour. That's what he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
But he also gave us a clue. It's a Ford. So already that I've got my head wrapped around this. How about you?
So do we have a transmission valve solenoid problem?
We're not going to talk about this because we can't finish the conversation. And you're right. There's a lot of what-ifs. Lots of what-ifs. So when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about all the what-ifs. But there's a lot of... We fixed this in a variety of other vehicles, and every one of mine were different repairs. There's no relation to it. I had a Ford van that would drop into first gear at 70 miles an hour. It locked up the rear tires. This guy's hanging on for dear life. I don't know why he continues to drive the van, but he goes on for months. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's dropping into first gear, because when I pull off the side of the road, I'm in first gear. Mm-hmm. So after two transmission overhauls, it still didn't fix it. So it's an interesting story, but I don't know if it's going to apply to this Windstar, because the Windstar is a front-wheel drive, and this van was a rear-wheel drive.
And
it was an Econoline 250. So, David, you stay right there. We're going to brainstorm this over the top of the hour, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, the lines are – there's four of them open. And Gil is taking the calls, so when he says KKNT, then you say, hi, Gil, and he'll move you to the front of the line. I think he will. And if he doesn't, we'll still get to you. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway, sitting here next to me. And I got a little bit of business to do, and we're going to go back to David and see if we can at least guide him or give him some places to look. But Kurt's Auto Repair's up on I-17 in Bell. He's a good guy. He has Eric and Jeff and Kurt, and they're all master technicians, ASE master technicians. So they work on domestic and foreign, both gas and diesel. But the best part about those three is they can work with one another. And between the three of them, they almost always hit the nail on the head. But sometimes they make a guess and it doesn't work, but they raise their hands. So gas, diesel, Kurtz, northeast corner of Bell and I-17. And here's something that you'll never find that's from the old days. The old days, Kurt's wife is going to stop by your house in the next 3 or 4 days after you visit them for the first time. She's going to have homemade baked goods for you. And it's their way, Kurt and his wife, their way of saying thank you for trusting us to work on your car. That's something we did in the 60s and the 70s. And actually, he still does that today. David, good morning. Or David, let's continue our conversation. You said you put the fire out.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Does it run in today, or was there work that needed to be done?
No, it still runs, but, you know, still every once in a while. But I will say this. It hasn't done it lately. It hasn't jumped into the lower gear lately, but it was still doing it periodically. It seems like it does it when the weather's cold.
Okay. And that doesn't help us for this reason, David. We'll know why it didn't do it. You know, it doesn't do it if it's an environmental issue, if it's hot or it's cold, after we find it. So we have to find it first. And the fact that it comes and goes doesn't really help us find it. So let me ask you a question. Do you have any idea what gear it's dropping to?
It feels like it's dropping into second gear.
So you're driving along.
It feels like it's dropping not one gear, but two.
Okay. You can figure that out if you just kind of drive the car and manually shift it. And when you manually shift it, just drive the van and manually shift it. Pull it down into low, and then click it, go to the next gear, click it, and you'll be able to find out which gear it drops to. The real question, Tom, is he's probably got an overdrive, probably a lockup converter in that. And so he's driving down the road. Are we unlocking the converter, or are we going out of overdrive into just drive?
And exactly. And
you don't know.
I'm pretty sure I'm almost positive it's not going into drive. I'm almost positive it's going into a lower gear, as the next lowest, because it lunges forward, but it's not locking up the wheels like you described with your other customer. That tells me that it's probably not going into first, or it's probably going into third gear, dropping out of overdrive and into third.
Okay. The reason why you don't want to diagnose your car based on somebody else is the reason why this guy said this. I'm driving along. Everything's fine. It drops into first gear. The tachometer runs wild. The engine starts screaming. He says, you'd have thought that I just did something and all of a sudden the throttle is sticking. He says, just all hell's breaking loose. See, that's what happens. We know that's what happens. So first and second at 70 miles an hour is one hell of a ride.
And when that
is so it's not second.
Okay. You can't say that it's not second. I'm just giving you an example. What's really important is when it drops, how fast are you going and what the tach is? Do you have a tachometer in your Windstar?
No. Okay. No, I don't have a tach. We were going 75. We're actually going 75 on I-10 on the way north. And when it hit, I dropped down to probably 40 or 50 miles an hour. So, and it did not screech the wheels, but it did lunge us forward. So I still get the impression that it's dropping through overdrive into the, not the next lowest gear, but the following gear, whatever that is.
Well, you probably got 1, 2, 3, 4 lockup and overdrive, or you can have overdrive and lockup. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so we got four forward gears, and then you probably are not going to feel the lockup of the converter because then we direct drive. One revolution of the motors, one revolution of the tires, kinda. So you're not going to really see that lockup or the overdrive. You can feel it, or you can feel it when you're shifting. But, you know, the basics. Check the fluid level.
How many times have we seen his symptom be created by 15 different things?
Not only that, there's equal amount of those cars that it's something really, really simple. Remember the Dodge van or the Chevy van I told you about? The harness, there's a 6-wire harness that goes from the transmission forward. Some rat had chewed up a bunch of the wiring, and when those two wires touched, it went to first gear.
And you know what I'm back to when he was talking about a fire?
Mm-hmm.
What created the fire? Was it fluid? And if so, was that problem even there before
right.
the fire. And what created that problem? I mean, there's so many things going back and forth here.
I think we'd want to determine what's around the fire and the damage, because if it was an electrical fire, he wouldn't have driven that away. If it was a gasoline fire, he wouldn't have driven that away. So it probably is some kind of a transmission fluid problem, because we got to have quite a high temperature to catch that on fire. So I don't know, but I'd want to look at the damage on the fire. I'd want to know what
Mark,
system. Go ahead.
Mark, I can tell you it was on wiring. There was wiring that it was insulation on a wiring harness that was on fire.
Okay.
But when I went back to find it, it's so dark in there that I could not find the charring. I could barely find the wiring, and I couldn't find the charring. So I don't know if it burnt through the wiring and the wiring now is flopping around down there, but I'm certain it was some kind of a wiring harness down there that was on fire.
Okay.
And I was able to, the reason I was able to put it out was because it was only insulation burning. If that was an oil fire, I'd have had a bigger problem.
Well, wait a minute, David. You just said that the wiring, you could see the metal and there was no charring. So how do you explain an electrical fire?
I could not find the charring when I went back to try to find the wiring harness.
Can you see the bare wires, David?
No, I can't find it anymore.
All right.
That's
and
the
you
problem.
Said...
And I,
David, it's yeah. time for you know us to ask questions. None of that makes any difference. None of it. We picked up that you're driving down the road and you have a fire. You put it out and the car continued to run. So we're kind of confused about that, because any wire harness that is involved in a fire typically takes the ability of the motor to start. So, you know, that issue now... Why couldn't it be the vent on the top of the transmission that blew a bunch of fluid out of it?
Because it was running hot, because it was pulling a hill.
There's all those possibilities.
Would the fluid be the wrong one, and the fluid's foamed up?
Yep. Or overfilled
and pushing it out.
So did we blow a bunch out of the vent, and maybe that did catch fire, and that wouldn't have anything to do with the wiring. And it probably wasn't long enough to burn anything other than the fluid that was on fire. So there's all of those kinds of things. I think the best thing for you to do is just, this is what you say. It's dropping into a lower gear for no reason, and there is an area of concern I want you to check and point out where the fire is at. That's all they need to know. That's all your shop needs to know. And they may want to go take a ride with you, and they may want to go down the freeway. They may want to just manually bring the RPMs up and go to fourth gear, go to third gear, and see if it'll drop from there. But no one's going to really be able to answer a lot of these questions until you fix it.
The more information that you can give your repair shop, it did this at that time, this happened at that time. The timeline is the most important thing. Don't put the cart before the horse, assuming that the cart was pulling the horse.
Yeah, it's...
Don't create more information that is not pertinent or specific to that symptom that you're having.
What you're talking about is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One is, I'm driving down the road, my wife and I are talking, we're enjoying, everything is right, and then number two happens. And then this is what happens when number two happens, and then I do this, and it fixes it or it doesn't fix it, but if I pull off the side of the road, and I put it in park, and I put it back down into drive, everything is normal until something else happens. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is the important part. And he doesn't have a tack, so he's not going to be able to tell us what the tack was tipped at. But he can drive second gear into a high range and listen to the motor. And he can drive third gear into a higher range. He can manually pull it in a second and on a Sunday morning go drive it on the freeway. And he can hear that motor scream. And if he goes to third and he brings it up to 70 miles an hour, he can hear that motor scream. So he can come to that conclusion which gear it seems to be dropping in. But all the guesses in the world, I think if we just fix it, I think we'll know. We can answer all those questions. But answering those questions isn't going to help us fix it. So what part of town do you live in, David?
In the Lake Pleasant area. Lake Pleasant.
Okay. I don't know anybody that far north. That's...
Well, I mean, we're at Deer Valley and Lake Pleasant Road, so.
Okay. One of the things that you might want to do is there's a transmission shop in your area called ANS. And it stands mm-hmm. for Automatic and Standards, or it stands for Alger and Shelley, because they're the owners, and they won't tell anybody what it means. But he's a wholesale guy, so you got to be introduced into him via a shop. So I'm going to make a suggestion. I think you should go to Action Auto, and they're on the I-17 in Deer Valley. And I think you ask Tom if he wants to make a run at this. And if he doesn't, more than likely, he's going to send you to Alger. And what?
Okay.
What?
All right.
Yeah, no, Tom at Action Auto.
Tom O'Kane.
Yeah, I don't have to give him their last name. When they walk in and ask for Tom, everybody's going to know who Tom is. But if I give his last name, then all the girls are going to chase him with transmission problems.
No, see? I'm thinking he should call him at home and say, can he come over for dinner and have a look at his transmission?
Yeah, that ain't going to work. Anyway, thank you, David. Good luck to you. I think between Tom and Alger, I think they can probably figure this thing out. It's just the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 makes all the difference in the world. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you'd like to join us. Year, make, and model, miles, then describe the symptoms. We're not necessarily concerned, and it's not important to us that the neighbor did this and did this, because then our answer is it still happening? And if you say yes, then none of that makes any difference. So the give and take is so important, that front counter give and take, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mark Salem and Tom Blackwell at your service. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Mark Salem and Tom Blackwell. Tom's from Tom Blackwell Automotive. It's actually Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway. Tom and I have known one another for 20 years, and we've been around the block a few times. We've made more than a couple of mistakes.
More than a couple.
Yeah.
But no more than two.
Well, and not only that is every mistake I've made, you've made, and every mistake you've made, I made.
And we can always... We can always chuckle.
We learn from them. That's the most important part, is you learn from them. Unless, of course, that you've been divorced 7 times, and then that makes a big difference.
Well, that makes you...
No, that's not me and you, so I wasn't talking about us. But
between the two of us?
That was a poor example. That was a poor example. But making decisions, and I hope my staff learns from them. So I just kind of extrapolated that to marriage, and I shouldn't have done that. Alrighty, I want to ask Heather a question before Heather asks me a question. Heather, are you there?
I'm here.
I want to. Are you married? And I'm not.
Yes.
Okay. How many times? Now you can answer this question however you want. You can say, Mark, I'm not going to answer the question, or you can say yes or no. When you go into the auto repair shop, are you told what to say?
Yes.
Okay. Does that? How close is that? Maybe diagnosis to what the end result is. Pretty close?
Pretty close.
Okay, fair enough. Then that's a good thing, because the symptoms drive the success of the repair. But I'm all ears. How can I help you?
Well, I have a tire pressure question.
Okay.
I have a 2016 Chevy Malibu, and I've noticed I have wear on the center of the tire.
Okay.
And the tire pressure on the door stays at 33, so that's where I keep it cold.
Okay.
Well, when I'm driving around the summer, it gets up to like 36 to 38.
Okay.
So my question is, when it's cold, should I, in the summertime, should I drop it down to 30?
Okay.
So that it goes more like 33 to 35?
Okay, that's some really great questions. I need to ask you, though, how many tires have the center obviously worn different?
All 4 tires.
All 4 tires. Okay, fair enough. Now, if she's got all 4 tires, now the center is worn more than either side of the center. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. That you've hit the nail on the head. Isn't it wonderful working with women? It's just wonderful.
Specific information, not covered up with any, just easy, simple, quick. It's so nice and refreshing
Oh boy!
To hear that, it really dig that hole deeper.
Dig the hole. He's new on the radio, so he's just digging.
Okay,
Heather, you've given us everything that I mean. We know what the inflation on the door is. We know what the inflation mm-hmm. or the inflation is when you warm up the tire. You got center wear in all four tires. What else do we need? Okay. How many times have you put on tires on this?
I have not replaced the tires since I bought the car.
Okay, okay. I'm concerned about the. She has all the symptoms of overinflation, but let me, as a tire expert, Heather, and I am a tire expert, the fact that it grows in pressure is expected, is very much expected. And the numbers that you give us, the parameters you give us of cold and hot, do not bother me in the least bit. They don't bother me at all. I'm concerned with why four. Now, the overinflation, and the reason I ask you if you had tires, is this. I wonder if they put the right tire on there. And if they didn't put the right tire on there, then you're using an inflation number that shouldn't be there. Right?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Makes sense. Did you buy the car new?
Heather?
What was that? I'm sorry?
Did you buy the car brand new?
I did not. It's a 2016. I bought it last year.
Okay.
If you have, for instance, a tire that is too or made for a wheel that is wider than what you have, let's say that the tire goes on a 5-inch wheel on your car, or the correct tire, and the one that is on there now is for a 9-inch.
In an exaggerated way.
In an exaggerated way.
Yeah.
What happens is the center of the tire is taller than the rest of the tire is.
Because we're squishing the sidewall.
Squishing the sidewall.
And we're crowning the top of the tread. So you have to talk in words like that when you're on the radio because you're moving your hands.
It doesn't work. They can't see it.
Heather can't see that. You know, Tom, Heather, Tom is exactly right. The sticker you looked at is going to start with P. The tire size is on there. The very first thing we need to do is look at the tire size on the sticker and look at the tire size on the wheel. And they both better be the same. If the tire size, for instance, if it's a 75 series tire that it belongs on it and somebody put a 70 series tire on it, that's going to bow the tread, right?
Correct.
Okay. So I think, and I think, Tom, you agree, I think a mismatch, a tire set that's not supposed to be on there is more than likely the problem. And I'll tell you who can help you with that is Discount Tire if you want. If you live on the west side, then go to S&S Tire. But your question to them is, do I have the right tires? But you can do that yourself, Heather. You can look at the door sticker and the tire size is there. Then the tire size on
this. They're matching.
They match? Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the only thing I can think of is, do you check it with the same gauge? Is there any possibility we've got a gauge that's 4 or 5 pounds off?
I don't. It's always the same gauge that we use all the time.
Okay. Well, then, if the sticker calls for 33, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. If you were my mother, I'd say, Mom, drop it to 30. I would. I'd say, drop it to 30. Now, it's too late to analyze whether there's going to be a betterment on your tire because the tire has already started a wear pattern that it's not likely to give up. But 30 is going to do this. It's going to take a tenth of a mile gallon out of your MPGs. It's going to give you a softer, better ride. And it's going to put a little bit more tire on the road for you. So a low traction condition, if you're driving down the road and your husband's mad at you, and you turn it into a side slide like, who were those guys on TV that drove that old Roadrunner?
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. If you start going down the road sideways, it'll stick a little tighter for you. But the idea is if you were my mom, I'd say drop it down to 30. What would you do, Tom?
I'd the same.
Okay. So we think you ought to do that, and we think you ought to get a digital gauge at one of the auto parts store and compare it to the gauge you're using. I would hate to think that gauge is 4 or 5 pounds off because that answers our question. That answers the whole question. Okay?
Sounds good.
Good luck to you, Heather. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it so much.
Heather, you did everything right. You answered our questions, and we get back and forth. And I'm especially impressed that she knows where the sticker's at, and she knows where the inflation's at.
She is empowered. She's reading her manual. She knows her car.
Yep. Or her dad was a mechanic and taught her well. right?
Whichever she has got it going on.
Exactly. One way or the other. Now, I think that's that's an extension of what it is. Wives come in and rarely do they do anything other than parrot what their husband told them. And it's easy to tell that. Because if you ask any questions, they don't know.
Yeah, and or father.
And or
brother.
Or boyfriend or whoever. The male in their life is telling them. And that could be his car, and he's trying to explain the symptoms to her so she can tell the shop. But he's saying, oh, I'm pretty sure it's an alignment problem, on and on and on. But she comes in and says, he's pretty sure the alignment problem. Yeah, but we need to know what it is we're looking for. Now, I use the famous, you know, words like, you turn on the radio and the wipers flap, okay? You just need to tell us that. We don't want you to guess what it is or have your boyfriend guess. Just tell us. I turn on the radio only on AM and the wipers flap. That helps. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about a really great shop in the West Side, Automotive Dynamics. It's the largest and most trusted source for complete automotive service in the Sun City area. Family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nyday opened it up in 1982, and I've known Chuck since the late 60s and early 70s. So they do a good job in that part of the relationship. It's symptoms, then they call you with an estimate. They come in underneath their estimate. Then they drive your car and the symptoms are gone. They understand that process. So they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, Automotive Dynamics. Derek is Chuck's son, and he runs it. And when you meet him, you'll understand why he runs it. It's because he's just a doggone good kid. All righty, let's go to the phones. Who we got next? Rick. Rick, I'm sorry to make you wait, but I'm all ears now.
That's quite all right. I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay.
I have a 08 H2, and the oil pressure sensor, I guess, must be gone because I came down from Pace and I was just about back to the valley and my oil gauge started going pegging to the high point.
Okay.
And then I stopped. Thank God I was right by Fort McDowell. So so I stopped there and when I came back out, started it up and the oil went completely to the zero. And it stayed there, but the truck ran fine the last part back to Phoenix, and so that's where I'm at.
Okay.
But the oil pressure sensor's way back there on the firewall.
Okay.
You know, down, there's no way I can get...
Can I tease you about that?
Sure.
Okay. Wah.
I was leaving Pete's Place in Star Valley.
Did you turn right at Pete's Place? Just say yes, Tom. Just say yes. Or he stopped for lunch.
Because Tom told that young lady to be specific, so I could be specific also. No. I was in Pete's Place and leaving there. Yeah. No, just kidding.
Okay. All right. The most important thing you didn't say is there's no engine clatter. Okay?
If it would have gone
to zero, that thing would have been clattering like a diesel. And if it went all the way high, probably blown the oil filter off of it. So we know we don't have a bad fuel. We don't have a bad oil pressure. And you're right. The oil pressure switch. Now, here's what I would do. I'd turn on the key. I'd find that pigtail for the oil pressure switch. I'd disconnect it. And the thing should go either one extreme or the other. It should either go high or it should go low when I ground the single wire. Then when I let go, it should go the other way. So the gauge is good. So the sender would come out and I would replace it. Any comment?
None.
Okay.
That's because you're right on the money.
And while we pull the oil pressure gauge out, if you want an actual pressure, then we hook up a manual gauge and we do that. But there's no reason to do that. You just go in and say, my needle is fluctuating wildly, and sometimes it's at zero and sometimes it's pegged, but I don't have any engine clatter. That's all you need to say. And if that shop looks at you like you're crazy, you need to find a new one. Because us old gray-haired guys, the 1, 2, 3, boom, you just hit the nail on the head. So, yeah, it is tough, but you don't have the right wrench. You haven't done it before, and it is a difficult one. I'm going to grant you that. All righty?
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yeah, my arms are too fat to reach back there, so...
Well, that's why we have little bitty technicians that weigh about 65 pounds, and we just stuff their butt inside underneath the hood and give them a flashlight and an oil pressure switch socket, and they come out with the socket. Tommy, is that right?
2 minutes.
I'm still back with the employees at Pete's Place, maybe having the thin arms that could help them.
Let me tell you something about Pete's Place. Outside Pete's Place in Star Valley, there's a cow up on the sign, okay? A cow. That's representative of the some of the dancing patrons. According to my son.
According to your son.
I've never been in there, but according to my son, they were up hunting and they stopped there for a beer. And now, you can always tell when archery season starts, and here's why. In archery season, the cow ends up looking at a porcupine because they shoot arrows into it.
Do you know the 1-2-3 that you've been talking about for the last hour and a half?
Yeah.
You just gave me the 1-2-3 on Pete's Place
about
the cow, and
yeah.
This is what you heard. And
yeah.
That's the three, the evasive.
Oh, yeah.
Away from putting it on somebody else.
But you know I tell the truth every minute of my life. Every minute of my life I tell the truth.
And it's nothing against trailer parks, but that trailer park behind there is where they get all those dancers.
Man, this is great.
Hey, I'm going to tell you a story, and this is a true story. I swear this is true.
It all starts out with the true story.
There's a bunch of guys that are going to go out in our quads, and we got our wives. And we're going to go out side by sides, four seaters. We're going to go out in the forest and mess around. Okay. So I say to the guys, let's stop at Pete's Place for lunch. And and some of these guys are cops, and they go, there's no way our wives are going to do that. And I said, listen, I'm going to come in the back way, and we're going to go in the back way, and they won't really know that this is a joint like that until we're seated. And they go, if you can pull this off, then you're a magician. So I take them in the back way. We get up, we get out of our quads, and we walk in the door. And you know what happens? He cards us. We're all north of 50 years old, and he's carding us. So we walk back out, and one of the guys says to me, it's God's way. It's God's way. So the owner comes out, and he goes, wait a minute. He's a brand new bouncer. A true story. And we said, yeah, okay. And he goes, no. He just did not. I told him to card everybody, but he doesn't have any comments. He says, come on in. So I look around at the guys, and the guys and the wives are giving me the, if you say yes, you're dead. And so I said, well, you know, when none of us have our wallets, that's the reason why we couldn't give you ID, is we left our wallets in our trucks. We don't have any money. So, you know, I'm sorry. And he goes, where do you live? And I said, I live on the other side of Payson. He says, I'll tell you what. He says, you tell me you're going to pay me and you guys can come in and eat and drink. Now, I turn around again, and by this time, the wives are looking at me like, you're dead meat if you say yes. I say to him, you know what? I got to go home and get my wallet anyway. We'll be back. We got back to my house, and those wives wouldn't even talk to me. The guys thought it was funny, but the wives didn't. All right, it's 40 minutes after.
Did you go back?
No, I didn't go back. We didn't use any services. So everybody,
I thought you're going to grab your wallet and head back.
He'd be heading back by himself.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Rick is wrong. I did not head back at all, and Renee would tell you if I did. Because I would have bullet wounds in me, and I would be bleeding profusely.
I have a quad story about wives.
Okay. But we're going to hang on to it because I got to take a break because Gil's yelling in my ear and he's using bad words. So at the 40, we're at 41:30, so he's already using bad words. So we'll be back right after this.
I went on the internet. Uh-huh. Found a new computer for this stupid thing. Been driving it for years. But when I put that new computer in, you know, from some guy off the internet there, the anti-lock brake system is not working at all.
Okay. Well, okay.
So now I'm at the point, I don't need this car anymore. There's not a mark on it. It's low mileage. It's an older car.
Okay.
But I'm sort of death scared to sell it to somebody else with that problem. Because it confirmed that the anti-lock brake system does not work.
Is there a red ABS light on?
There is.
Okay. I don't know what you're going to do. It's kind of there's only two things. You tell them it's got a red ABS light on and you give them some kind of a consideration on the price, or you go get it fixed. I don't know, and neither does anybody else, if the swap in the computer causes problem. You'd be surprised to find how many wheel sensors we replace or clean. So it's a situation where you don't really know what's the deal until you do it. But let me touch on a couple things you said. What color is the check engine light?
Red.
No, it isn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have a engine light warning anymore.
Okay,
that,
I know.
That went away right away.
But here's this is what I'm trying to say. The check engine light is yellow, orange. Yeah, that means caution, but continue on. So you said she had a check engine light. She was told she couldn't drive it, and this is this. That's all a lie. That's just a lie.
It was. It was a bunch of nonsense. And that was at a dealership.
Okay, well, whatever. Don't say the name of that. But as far as your question is I think I would have it diagnosed just at least to know. If we get in there and we don't find a folder that says ABS, then you got something that you shouldn't have got. And so what? So it's really an issue. It's no different than if the car. But the red light on the dash is going to fool some people, and that probably is going to create a problem with respect unless the price is adjusted appropriately.
Correct, because you don't know what to take and deduct if that's what you choose to do until you know what the cost is going to be. If you just say, oh, you know what, I heard it was ABS XYZ, and it's going to cost $1,000, so I'm going to reduce the car $1,000.
It could be something
yeah,
a wheel sensor.
It could be something so simple a wheel sensor.
Yeah. So the question is once we get in, it won't take us more than 30 minutes to figure out that this isn't programmed for ABS or you've actually got an ABS problem. And if that's the case, then we're going to find out what it is and call you with an estimate. So that's really what needs to be done. Stephen, thank you very much for laughing with us. John, you're up next. How can I help you, John?
Yeah, Mark. I've got a 06 Chevy Colorado, 2.85 speed. 371,000 miles on it. I'm starting to get reduced power mode a lot. And I don't know what the code is for that, but then the other ones I've also gotten is a P2120, P2122, and like low voltage on that and the map sensor. Now, the reduced power thing will come on since it's a 5-speed. I'll be in the garage. Put it in reverse, just let the cut slide a little bit, and then idle back and roll back, the reduced power mode will come on.
Okay.
Do you have any ideas?
Well, Tom, which one are you going to attack first, the mass airflow sensor, the voltage one, or the low power one?
Or do you want me to go into the alternator, or do you want me to go into any of that stuff
no.
as well?
No, which code are you going to grab first? Because we have to start with one. We can't expect...
Okay. It was a map sensor, not the mass airflow sensor.
All right. MAP sensor. Which one are you going to go for first?
I'm going to go to a throttle position switch.
Okay. He doesn't have that code. So if you're going to go in and test, why are you going to go to a throttle position switch?
If there's a loss in position,
mm-hmm.
it'll go into low power mode.
Okay, but there's a lot of other things that can make it go into low power
exactly, mode. Exactly, and this is where I'm going with all of this.
Okay, all right. I'm going to disagree slightly because I'm going to check manifold back in first to make sure I got 16, 18 inches to the map sensor. I'm gonna leave the low power light alone until I verify that I've got all this other stuff working. Then I'm going to attack the low power. But I'm not going to spend a lot of money checking map sensors. But how about if you had a nice scanner, what would that tell you?
You're going to be able to check the if we had a, for instance, on my own vehicle, when we had a throttle body, and the throttle body would only move so far, the butterfly,
mm-hmm.
it would do exactly that same thing going into low power mode.
Okay.
But you can't do that unless you have a scanner.
Well, yeah. It's not something you're going to be able to
fix. You can't check the sweep on it.
Right. And with a scanner, it's a step up. Our scanners can cost anywhere from $3,000 to $15,000 that allows us to talk to the computer. So when we tune in to the throttle position sensor at idle, we better see somewhere between a half a volt and 1 volt, somewhere around there. At wide open throttle, we better see between 4.5 and 5 volts. So, and we don't have to have the motor running to check the throttle position sensor sweep.
Key on.
Yep, key on.
Engine off.
Right, and we can look at the sweep. The same way with the map sensor. We can look at it with the motor off, and it'll give us one reading. And as soon as we start it, it'll be the opposite end because it's going to see high vacuum and low vacuum or no vacuum. So we can go in there and look at that. That's part of, what's your diagnostic fee? What's the range of your diagnostic fee?
It could be $135, which is about a typical cost, because that's about an hour.
Okay.
And then you're going to know at that point whether you need to go further. So let's say between $130 and $250.
Okay. And people will hear me say $75 to $150. That's not my range. That's the range of the market. I don't want to say $75 because they'll beat up their shop for $100. So I always take everything we do and bracket it, knowing full well this is the lowest and this is the highest. That's what I do. So people will say, why are you giving a bracket on a diagnostic? Well, that's the market. I don't want to thump my chest and say I'm the lowest or the most expensive. There's 20% of ours we got to go past our original estimate. We just get in deep where we've got to start pinning wires and stuff like that. That's not in the diagnostics. So this one's going to be an easy one. I don't see. You got three codes, and it ain't going to be hard to check the operation of the map sensor.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just going to ask you. Is it going to be between a 1 and a 10? Is this like a 3?
Tom?
Well, as far as 1 meaning the very simplest and 10 meaning the most difficult?
Yeah.
I think a 3 is...
I think all three of them are 3.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, this isn't going to tax our brain. If you gave us 17 codes, and I'm exaggerating here, and tell me that they only come on a Wednesday at 2, that's a 10. And my dog even agrees with that. That's a 10. So, or if it happens only once in a blue moon, or it's one of those where I turn the radio station to an AM and the wipers flap, that's going to be the big dog right there. But in your particular case, I'm going to say that most everybody's going to be between 75 and 150 for the diagnosis. Maybe a little bit more, because if they count codes, they may count dollars with the code. So if we've got three codes, I'm going to do $50 a piece. Some of them do that, some of them don't do that. But that's what I'm thinking. What part of town you live in?
East Mesa.
Do you have a shop that you like already?
No.
Okay. Well, I'd go to Thompson's on Stapley and Main Street. Brian and Thelma run it. Both of them come from families that go back in the car repair industry to the 60s. So Brian Vivian and Thompson family is his wife. So between the two of them, both of them swept cigarette butts off the parking lot when they were, just in first grade, which is all my kids and your kids did too. So it's Thompson's is where I would send you, and I would just simply say to them, these are the codes I have. Would you call me with an estimate when you're done? I'm going to bet you that at least one of those codes is going to be hook the vacuum line up, fix the vacuum line, do something simple to fix it. Because codes are like this. It costs $100 to find it. Some of them, not many, cost a dollar to fix it. That doesn't happen too often, but that does happen. But I think this isn't going to be anything more than a 3 or 4. Anyway, thanks very much, John, for that. And I noticed he had 300,000 miles on a 2.8 liter. Isn't that what he said?
370,000
miles. That's amazing, because that's a whole lot of mileage for a 2.8 that really gave us a lot more trouble than that. Who's next?
Mm-hmm. That'll be Susan.
Susan, good morning. What can we do for you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I just called to ask you a question. I have a 67 Mustang. It was my first car, and I haven't driven it probably since January or December. I used to take it for ride and whatever, mm-hmm. but I did some hip surgery, and I'm doing it again, so I haven't really taken my car out. My husband hasn't done it either. If I go to start my car, is there something special? Will it blow up? Will it caught a fire? Should I do that to see if it's doing? Do I need a battery?
I
haven't done it, and I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea to go out and start the car and then shut it off.
Okay.
I think if you're going to go out and start it, then go drive it. Let's run it through a heat cycle. Let's go all the way to 200 degrees in the cooling system. Maybe you won't hit that on a 65 Mustang, but let's go all the way up and all the way down. When you start it up, it's kind of like taking your horse out of the barn and walking him around a tree and putting him back in. He's never going to be a Mustang. So it's just, if you're going to use it, and if it starts and runs and idles, and you put your foot on the brake and you put it in drive and it idles, and then you accelerate and it doesn't go ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Right.
Just one drive it. Tell your husband that you want to go visit your boyfriend clear across town. He'll probably want to go with you that way. and you guys can take or go to Casa Grande for lunch, to the casino, whatever. But go take it out. Well, I'm just giving you some examples.
So, I go to Nadine's. I've been going there, but now it's Kelly's Air Park. That's where I go. When I called him, he said, start it up, and I wasn't sure because I wanted to talk to you because everybody has a different opinion, and it's like I've had my car forever, and okay. I still have it, and I try to make sure it's whatever, but I did hip surgery, so I haven't done anything with it. Then I'm doing hip surgery again, and it's just so darn hot, and it's like
I
take it out for a drive, but we used to go up to on Bell 94th Street up there and just up to the mountain where and just drive it around, but it's been so I didn't do anything because of my hip and I wasn't doing anything.
Okay,
because
well, let me just tell you. Hold on. I got 7 seconds. Make sure any new shop that you use, you check for reviews. Make sure any shop you use, check for reviews. Mark at MarkSalem.com.